Hey guys, if you know me, you know I love to travel and you know I love to save money. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further. Literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships. How to maximize points for real savings, not just free bottled water. How to avoid paying for upgrades you won't use, and so much more. They're doing great work over there. Check it out. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast.
The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Carrie Dow. And before we get to Carrie, here's a few announcements. Our website, traveltalespodcast.com. Go there. See photos of our guests. See links to their social media. See links to our social media. Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Follow us there, please. We have a Facebook page as well. If you listen to us on a streaming app, please give us a good rating there. I don't care if it's Apple Podcasts or iHeartRadio or Spotify, wherever you hear us, why not give us a good rating? Give us a thumbs up, something to help boost our presence, and even more people will find the show. Costs you nothing, I'd appreciate it. If you think you'd be right for the show or know somebody who'd be right for the show, or maybe you want to write me and ask me for some travel advice, or maybe just want to tell me I'm great, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Carrie Dow reached out to me. She is a freelance writer based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. For many years, she lived in Denver, and she's written a lot of things about travel, food and beverage mostly, which sounds like a pretty good gig, eating and drinking your way around the world. But she also started a blog that's near and dear to her heart because it focuses on animals and animal welfare around the world. It's called What's Positive? Positive, get it? P-A-W-S-I-T-I-V-E. What'spositive.org, where she showcases animal experiences around the world. And this is always something that interests me when I travel because every culture has a different opinion on animals, not just how they're treated, but how, you know, they're eaten or how they're hunted or protected. And Carrie is an animal lover. And this is the kind of thing that concerned her with travel around the world and also here in America. And it's also a subject that we don't really talk about that much here on the show. So I was interested in getting her take on it. And she turned out to be very cool and very nice, which is a bonus. So if you're thinking of taking a trip and maybe having some kind of experiences with animals, whether it's going to a petting zoo or working at a shelter or riding an elephant or whatever you want to do, check out her blog, whatspositive.org, and maybe use it as a helpful resource. If anything, just to see if these animals are being mistreated in any way, or maybe a organization is not what they appear to be. Either way, it was a pleasure to meet Carrie, and I hope you like our chat. Here's my talk with Carrie Dow. Carrie, you're talking, you're in Charlotte, North Carolina?
That's where I live.
This is hurricane season. Anything on its way there? Are you okay?
Not that I know of. Fortunately, Charlotte is pretty well inland, but we do get some residuals, but not too bad.
All right. Are you a native there? Have you been there your whole life?
No, I am not. I was born and raised in Nebraska. And then lived in Denver, Colorado for over 20 years. We moved to Charlotte in February of 2020.
Whoa, what timing. Because you saw what was coming or was just this weird fate?
My husband got a really good job offer. So we couldn't pass it up. So we moved to Charlotte on a kind of a whim. And
then the world shut down.
And then the whole world shut down. In fact, we live about 15 minutes from the airport with the idea of traveling anywhere and everywhere, and then spent a year and a half at home.
Oh, boy. I'm sorry. I mean, did his job at least continue?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
Still going strong. I was going to say mine took a bit of a hit, but things are back on track, so all good.
Well, what was your job, and was it animal related?
So I'm a freelance writer. I write about anything and everything. So Jill of all trades. I earn a paycheck writing about the food and beverage industry. So there's a lot of travel with that, agrotourism and things like that. I also specialize in the brewing and distilling industries, which is a lot of fun. Animal part is what I enjoy. That's what I like to do when I'm traveling. I'm always looking for the animals, both wild and not so wild, when I travel. And so that's kind of how that started. And I've been blogging about it for about 15 years now and met a lot of amazing people and some really cute animals.
Yeah, no, I've been to the site. What's Positive? I like the name too. So this was the one you started 15 years ago?
Actually, it started, I was originally the international pet examiner for examiner.com.
Pet examiner.
Then, yeah. That, and
okay.
That, it, that folded in 2016.
Oh, okay.
And, but I had all these, I just had all these wonderful contacts and, you know, knew all these really interesting people doing a lot of good things in that space. And I just wanted to keep doing it. So I started the blog.
All right. That's great. Mm-hmm. So do you continue to write for other publications and freelance?
Yes. Yes. I write for a whole bunch of publications. Most of them, the food and beverage ones are industry associations. So you're not really going to see them much on newsstands, but they're available online and, outlets like that. So,
all right. Before we get to the animals, I'm fascinated by food and beverage. So, are you like a beer person, a whiskey person, a wine person, or all the above? What is it?
All the above. Now, I started out as a beer person, focusing on the beer industry, and as fate would have it, I got a wonderful job working for it was a website called Drink Denver. And it was a part of a larger organization called the Drink Nation. And basically, I got to go visit happy hours all over Denver, Colorado for like 8 years.
Wow. That sounds fun. Maybe not the best for your liver, but sounds great. And what did you learn about happy hours in Denver? Good ones, bad ones? What's the best one if people are going to Denver?
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's such a tough one. Because it's everywhere you go is different and wonderful, and everybody tries to do their own things. Actually, the biggest thing I learned is that bartenders love sharing their creations with people. So I would usually go in there with like this mindset of I'm going to have, you know, two cocktails because, you know, maybe I drove there or something, and they would probably make every cocktail on their menu for me and just talk and love it. The enthusiasm was fantastic, but I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't drink all these things.
Well, I mean, for someone who's working, you're quote unquote working when you're doing this.
Yep.
I'm sure your friends benefited greatly from this and
oh, yes.
Tagged along. Yeah. Yep, I mean, yep. You're a great friend to have.
Oh, for sure. Yep.
Did you know, I always wonder about this, like I've talked to a lot of people who write travel guides and have to do restaurant reviews and that kind of thing. Do you know the difference of when people are like doing a little extra because they know you're a journalist and they know you're reviewing, or how do you be objective? Can you slide in undercover, or how does this work?
So for me, first of all, I wasn't reviewing. So that's
okay.
That's not what I did. And even today, it's not so much a review. My goal is to share the experience. And so I tell, you know, they know I'm coming. So there is that. So there is a little bit probably of preparation on their part. But I tell them I want to have the experience that the customer would have. And then I try to relay that information for them. And so, you know, we'll try some of the high end things, which is fun. But then, you know, we'll also try some of the low end things as well. And, you know, here's what, you know, because a lot of people do happy hour because it's a budget way to enjoy places. So.
Well, I can tell you this. I'm a big fan of the happy hour, especially as I've gotten older. A, because I don't want to, I'm not out that late. And B, it's expensive. I mean, the drinking especially, I mean, it is crazy expensive. And if you can get a deal, even if it's a couple bucks off a beer or something, I mean, that's, it adds up. So, you know, and you throw in a couple appetizers and I'm good. That's all right. And then I'm in bed by 8 o'clock. It's great.
In an ironic twist, North Carolina does not allow happy hours.
You know what? I'm originally from Chicago, and I remember when they got rid of them because
in the traditional
they said it promoted
sense.
Over drinking or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you can't.
They did this,
You cannot discount liquor in North Carolina. So there are some workarounds, of course, but technically there's no happy hour here.
Okay. And then I'll get off the drinking part. I mean, have you come to a more appreciation now for things like wine and whiskey and things like
bourbon? Yeah.
I've gotten into bourbon a little bit, but regular like Scotch whiskey is still too much for me. It's still too harsh.
Same here. And I'm in whiskey country now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Colorado is too. But I've always loved rum because we do a lot of traveling in the Caribbean. And so, and there's some really good rum producers here in North Carolina. So that's been fun.
Rum in North Carolina. I never would have. Okay.
Well, that's where the pirates hid the rum, was in the Outer Banks.
Oh, so there you go. Yeah. Okay. I just automatically equate it where sugar grows, you know, where the sugar cane is. That's where you find rum. So that's why it's always in the in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. But this sounds like a pretty good gig. It sounds like, was there a moment
like
you
said, it pays the bills.
Yeah. Was there a moment you just burned out on the whole, you know, bar thing and just like, I don't know if I can keep doing this.
So far I'm
not yet. All right. Good.
Yeah. Not yet. There's always something new and different and fun to try. And North Carolina's kind of going through a distilling boom like Colorado and California did a couple years ago. So it's kind of fun to see that, you know, to see that growing and to see people take an interest in it. And, you know, and then I have the advantage of knowing behind the scenes. And so it's been fun to watch.
I do remember from my times in Colorado, tons of microbreweries, a lot of big microbrewery area. And I took a media tour back in 2016 of San Diego. And I had no idea San Diego was like the second highest number of microbreweries in the country or something. I couldn't believe it. I mean, so you'll find pockets of around the country of like, little tiny breweries are everywhere.
Yeah. We have our own Asheville is just filled, big and small, because Sierra Nevada is there. New Belgium is there. Yeah. So they've got fantastic beer.
Give me one beer, small beer that maybe we don't know that you'd like to promote that you like.
Oh, a brand? Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's tough. So my favorite beer style is Hefeweizen.
Okay.
Which is an unfiltered beer. It's just, I don't know, it's just a little thicker, a little more to it.
I like it. It's not for everybody, but I like it.
So basically any place doing traditional Bavarian, German beers, I'm all for that.
Have you been to the beer belt in Europe? The what I call the beer belt, you know, the three countries you have to visit, which are Germany, of course, Belgium, and the Czech Republic. Those three places are amazing.
I've only been to Germany. So yeah, we spent some time in Munich and Stuttgart.
Okay.
And so yeah, still working on the other two.
Go to the Czech Republic. It blew me away, the Czech Republic. I mean, you could go there and just order the cheapest beer, whatever local, just give me that. And you, oh my God, this is amazing.
That does not surprise me at all. That would be
so
fantastic.
Good. Okay. Animals. I mean, this is how you got, you wrote me about, cause I didn't know about all this other stuff until I just talked to you now.
I know. Surprise.
Yeah. Right. So, your site, tell me about your history. I'm guessing you're an animal lover, and how many you've owned, how many do you have? And were you sparked by what you've seen around the world, you know, not everybody treats their animals the same way the West does, and it's a different mindset. What was the spark that maybe you wanted to publicize and really draw attention to?
Oh, gosh. Well, if you want to take kind of a deep dive, back in 2006, I was visiting a friend in Australia, and she had twin daughters, and they were, gosh, they were only like 8 at the time. So we all went to Australia Zoo, which is Steve Irwin's zoo. And okay. We got to pet kangaroos. We got to pet koalas. We got to feed the elephants. And I was like, oh, my God, this is the best thing ever, and wanted to do more of it. And this was even before I started writing full time. But basically, when I returned home, though, I started thinking about, like, the ramifications of petting animals and things like that. And, you know, technically they're wild animals. Like koala bears, you're really not supposed to hold them. They're actually very delicate. And things like that. And so I kind of started thinking about these things. And so when I started writing for Examiner, that's why I focused on animals, because I wanted to learn more about it. And I was also involved with a local animal shelter and doing things in that space as well. And so basically, as my husband and I traveled the world, we just started visiting local animal shelters. We walked a lot of dogs and yeah. things like that, and learning how other places run their animal shelters. Because believe it or not, there are some surprisingly successful animal shelters in the Caribbean, on Caribbean islands, which, you know, there's finite resources, finite money, finite people, you know, they don't have a lot to work with, and yet they're actually doing a pretty good job. And I thought, well, if they can do it, you know, anyone can. And so the idea was to share information about this is what this place does and this is what another place does. And then it kind of morphed from there into pretty much all animals.
Well, I was in Australia a couple of years ago. I went to the Taronga Zoo over in Sydney, and which is big. It's very big. And I did see the koalas. They were in a separate area, and we didn't hold them, or we just went to go look at them. Mm-hmm. But before we get into, like, you know, tourism with animals and stuff like that, in general, what are your thoughts on zoos? Mine have changed over the years.
I actually think most zoos are wonderful, especially I can really only speak on zoos in the U.S. And it's tough because the rules are different wherever you go, the rules and the laws. And even here in the States, every state has its own laws, even down to county and city levels. And so for the most part, it's, you know, difficult to determine what is good and what is bad. But I do feel like there is a concerted effort here in the States. We have some wonderful, fantastic zoos. I was actually at San Diego Zoo a month and a half ago. And I think I went there. I think my parents took me once there when I was like 4 or something. No memory of it whatsoever.
That's a big one. That's a big one. I went there as a kid, too, when we did the drive across the country.
Oh, yeah, the big drive to, yeah.
And the big Griswold, the Griswold trip from Chicago to California, we did that.
Yeah, and I absolutely loved it. And I liked what they were doing. They had, I would talk to the volunteers and who thoroughly enjoyed being there, even though they weren't getting paid. And, you know, and it was just, it was a good experience. And there's a lot of places like that. Here in the U.S. and, you know, a lot of places around the world as well. I do think it's interesting. I did brush up on my history before I began talking to you. Most zoos around the world were actually started by royal families. We're talking Renaissance, you know, where they would collect exotic animals to show off their wealth, basically.
Yeah, you know, to show off all the places they conquered. Look what we took out of Africa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then
The Romans did this, you know.
Yeah. And then to see where we've come today, I think that's pretty amazing. So
Yeah, it's weird. I remember for an old TV show I hosted, we shot promos down at SeaWorld in San Diego. And, you know, I'm a big diver and I love, you know, sea life and stuff like that. On the one hand, you see where, you know, they would take distressed animals and, you know, and fix them, you know, or cure them and breed and help, you know, some endangered things. And then on the other hand, you got Shamu over there. Who's mm-hmm. living his life in a tank. It's pretty conflicting. And I think every zoo's kind of like that. I mean, we were, I know my girlfriend and I, we were walking through. I hadn't been to a zoo in a while, you know, and she had never been to Australia. So she wanted to see the wild animals. So it's like, well, we could see some right here. I mean, we're in Sydney right now. I mean, we don't have to leave. We can go. But yeah, she didn't, the whole zoo experience, I think, turned her off. I guess seeing them cooped up and, in confinement, yeah. I guess. It's a hard thing, actually, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard. But they talk of conservation, and they talk we're saving these endangered things, and, you know, they might be worse out in the wild, you know, and in more danger. It's really hard, you know. And
yeah, then I eat meat. I get that question a lot, to be honest. And that, you know, I tell people, you know, as long as we humans keep messing up the planet, we need zoos. Like, otherwise, you know, some of these creatures aren't going to exist anymore. So,
yeah. I mean, I did the gorilla trek in Uganda and Rwanda, and that was pretty amazing. That's like kind of life-changing thing. And on the one hand, you're like, should we be around them? And it's just like, you know, they were on the brink of extinction. And in the way, this is kind of helping them. They're even employing old, you know, ex-poachers to serve as mm-hmm. trackers and guides, and you just have to convince the locals who are very poor. You know, it's hard to blame them for anything. Yeah. And they've, you know, experienced a lot. But you just have to sell them on a way that these animals are worth more alive than they are dead. You might Absolutely. Kill one for one and make a little, you know, in short term, you'll make some money. But then in the long term, you're ruining it. You can make money off this thing every week just by people coming to look at it.
Yep. You know what I mean? Yep.
So, is there a country out there you see it doing it right, like that you've been impressed with?
Oh, gosh. I had a very interesting experience in Nepal a couple of years ago. I signed up for a volunteer tourism group, and I'll give them a little plug. It's Animal Experience International, based in Canada, and they organize voluntourism around animals. So they have a network of facilities all over the world. And some of them are animal rescue. Most of them are animal rescue. And it can be tailored to what you want to do. Do you like elephants? Do you like turtles? They'll do that for you. And they also do one or two group trips every year. So I participated in a group trip to Nepal, where we worked at an animal shelter in Kathmandu. And then we also did some work with rabies vaccination in Bhaktapur. And it was kind of interesting. Every time I tell people I went to work with animals in Nepal, they always ask me, oh, did you work with the elephants? And I'm like, no, just dogs and cats. So, you know, yeah, typical dogs and cats. And I think it's this way in a lot of Asian communities, where basically street dogs and cats are the norm. However, they're actually very well taken care of. They're part of the community. As we walked around, you would see bowls of rice and water set out for them. At night, they would curl up on the front steps of shops and apartment buildings. And, you know, and they had, you know, they had names, like the local kids would tell us who the dogs were and things like that. And they're even helpful, like they'll protect the community. Something that a lot of people don't know is that street dogs really only live within a few city blocks their entire lives. They're not out there roaming around. People seem to think that they're traveling, and they really don't. They stay in one place. And so, you know, if a stranger, whether it's a human or another animal or maybe a wild animal, comes into that neighborhood, the dogs will bark and scare them away and things like that. And so to see how important those animals were, to that culture. You know, here in the States, we're trying to get animals off the streets. And sometimes I wonder, maybe we shouldn't. You know, the cats, they kill rats and mice and, you know, and protect people that way. And so it's just kind of an interesting thing to think about, you know, how it's done differently in other parts of the world.
Yeah, that's always a shocker for a lot of Americans when they travel around the world to see the stray dogs everywhere. And not, I mean, in every continent. I mean, you go to Europe, to Greek island, and then everybody who knows the stray dogs that are around and just like somebody. So what are your thoughts on there's programs that go in and spay and neuter, at least try to do that. I mean, have you worked with them or know anything about that or have an opinion?
Yeah, actually, I've covered a specific example is I've covered Save a Gato in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Because I work on the cruise ships. I walk by that the cat area all the time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they have that little building there.
Yeah. I see tons of cats everywhere.
Oh, they do amazing work. I spent like a whole day with their volunteer coordinator, and she's been there for years. And I think it's fascinating. First of all, they name all those cats. Every single one of those cats has a name. And the volunteer I was with, she knew them all. Like she drove around. We were driving around in a little golf cart. And she would just call out names, and these cats would come running from the rocks and the bushes, and you know she did have some cat food that helped a little bit to get them to come out. And they care for they do trap, neuter, release. They have all their vaccines. They take care of the cats. They even have you can't see them; they're hidden. But they even have litter boxes in some of those spaces, and they. Because they don't want the cats, you know, doing their stuff on the sidewalks where everybody's walking. So they put these litter boxes in and they clean those like every other day and, you know, and feed them every morning. And they're actually very well taken care of. And the organization, you know, they will tell you that if these cats weren't there, then that whole area would be overrun with mice and rabbits and pigeons. And, you know, for better or for worse, it's the circle of life. But yeah, there's a lot of cats there and they're now a tourist draw. People want to come see them because the Park Service tried to get rid of them a couple years ago. In fact, they ended up getting sued. There's an organization called Alley Cat Allies that kind of protects street cats and trap, neuter, release cats. And so, yeah, they went to court to stop that. And.
I always wonder walking by it is if this was like a public thing. Was this a city run thing or is this a private enterprise that they're doing?
It is a nonprofit, but it is a private enterprise. The only thing the city provided them was that building, and I believe they pay the electric bill. There's no bathroom in that building, There is water to it. So if a cat gets sick or injured, they can bring it into that building and care for it. Or if there's a mama, they'll bring the mama and the kittens in and make sure, you know, everything's okay there. More serious cases, they have a vet that they work with. But yeah, other than that, the city doesn't, I mean, still that's a lot, a building and electricity. That's a lot, but that's
sure. It. I always wonder because all of a sudden you're just walking around. Let me go check out the old fort. And then there's this little building with 1,000 cats hanging around it. And you're like, what the hell? And there's like a cat painted on the side of it. I was like, well, obviously this is some kind of I didn't know if it was a veterinary office or some kind of but you can see them. Anybody who's on a ship, you can walk right to it from the ship. I mean, it's right there in old San Juan.
Yeah,
right next to the basketball courts.
Yeah.
Right? Elephants. I've seen this and every Instagram, influencer will see they're either riding on one or bathing one. Mm-hmm. I've ridden on one 20 years ago and then felt bad about it afterwards. Not only because, I was seasick on top of it. I don't know if you've ever ridden on it. I mean, you're going back and forth. I was getting nauseous up there in that little chair. But you hear about their lives in Thailand and other places like that, I mean, they're working animals in the field quite uh-huh. often. And like a mule would be here.
Yeah, that's very true.
So, I mean, there's cultural things. Thoughts on elephant riding? And have you done those where I think it's maybe outside of Chiang Mai, you can go to a shelter or something like that and work with a local organization?
Yes. That is very interesting. I've never ridden an elephant, but I've fed several. They've all been at zoos. So I don't, which is not the same experience. But that is another question that I get surprisingly quite a lot. I can't speak for everywhere because everywhere is so different. But to give you an example, several years ago, pre-COVID, my husband and I went to Bali. And I was all excited. I wanted to see an elephant sanctuary. And I'd been reading about them and thought this will be something, you know, good for the blog and stuff. But I also like to vet the organizations that before I visit them. And I had written about and done some work with a dog rescue on Bali. And the woman that runs it, I decided before I came to ask her, like, what she thought, like, was there an elephant sanctuary or experience that she could recommend to me for my trip? And her email response back to me was no, none of them. She said, don't go to any of them. And she said they were horrible. Those were her words. So we didn't do that. And instead, she recommended to me a visit to the Sacred Monkey Sanctuary in Ubud, which is what we ended up doing. And it's fantastic, right?
Yeah.
It is amazing.
Don't keep food in your pockets. They'll find it.
No.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a little scary, though.
Just,
I mean, they're scary.
Oh,
they're all over you. They're all over you.
They are, but we kind of didn't care. Well, we didn't bring food, so we weren't really that worried about it.
What was her specific issue with the elephant thing? Was it the fact that they were just exploiting for money, or were the soon as the tourists left, the animals were abused again? Was that
happened? All of it, actually. Yeah, she said most of them. I'm trying to remember her words, but most of them were disguise, I think was the term she used. They have a front of we're saving these animals, and these elephants came from other parts of the island and they were abused. And then, people leave at night and things weren't so good. And then there are, you know, people, there were issues with riding elephants and things like that. And, you know, is it good or is it not good? People don't know.
Is there an animal rescue you found that's doing it right, that's reputable somewhere?
I do know the organization I mentioned earlier, Animal Experience International, there is an elephant refuge in Thailand that they work with specifically. Because when I was picking my trip with them, I had a choice between Nepal and Thailand. I ended up choosing Nepal. But that was basically, they had a 2-week trip to Thailand where you could help care for those animals.
But say the name of that organization that kind of vets these places again.
It's Animal Experience International.
Animal Experience International. Okay.
It's a Canadian company. It's a B Corp. And the woman that heads it up, her name is Nora Livingstone.
Okay. What about Africa? Mm-hmm. Is there anything like through you and the organization have found that have really a reputable kind of animal experience that you've done or know of?
I haven't done one yet, but that organization does have some organizations in Africa that they work with. The one I'm most intrigued by is basically it's a dog and cat rescue in Malawi, which I thought that I thought that would be fun to say, hey, I went to Africa. Oh, did you see lions? No, dogs and cats.
Yeah, dogs and cats. I petted a schnauzer over here.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that would be interesting. And then they do have a couple of more wildlife rescues that they work with. I don't remember those off the top of my head, but I would love for that to be my next experience.
I know, especially something that's endangered. When I was over there, I was like, is there anywhere I can help a rhino? Anything I can do? Something, you know, just like...
Exactly, yeah.
If while I'm here, can I do... I mean, I'm paying you money to just... You know, but on the other hand, you know, for every one of me, there's a hunter going over there to mm-hmm. shoot the same things I'm looking at. So,
yeah,
it's really disheartening, but it's, how about closer to home here? I mean, you don't have to travel abroad to help animals. So, how about stateside, a place that's really doing it right in your eyes?
Oh, yeah, very true. Actually, I have a recommendation that you can do here in the States or abroad. In fact, I recommend doing this in Europe if you have the time. But I think a great travel activity would be to walk shelter dogs. And so that's what my husband and I try to do when we travel. And the great thing about it is you don't need experience or a lot of experience to do it. Because when you're talking about volunteering for a rescue or an animal refuge, you really need training for that. So that organization isn't going to take on someone that's maybe visiting for a week or whatever.
Yeah. But other than making you shovel poop in the cage, you know.
Exactly. But a lot of places, Maui, Hawaii comes to mind.
We were just in Kauai. I found out after we got back that the week we were there, we could have like walked dogs, shelter dogs on the beach. And my girlfriend would have like flipped. She would have loved that.
Oh yeah. I believe they'll let you have them for the day and you can, you can take them hiking and a lot of organizations here and abroad will do that. And I'm like, what better way to learn about the city you're visiting than to walk a dog? They'll give you routes and maps if you want, or you could just go off in any direction. And imagine like walking around Paris with a shelter dog and think of how many locals you might meet doing that, you know, and, or the things you might see kind of off the tourist path by doing that. So
what are some of the places you've done it?
Well, my favorite place so far, was Santorini.
Back to Greece. All right.
Yes,
cool.
It was fantastic. Yeah. So there is an animal rescue there. It's the Santorini Animal Welfare Association. Their nickname is Sawa, and their rescue facility they call Sawa Land. It's a newer facility down on the southern part of the island, and very difficult to get to. Recommend four-wheel drive.
Oh, four-wheel drive. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's the road turns to dirt real fast. It's kind of in that wine country down south. They have when you go down the road, there's all these beautiful like grapevines and everything, and then those kind of disappear, and then the road turns to dirt.
Boy.
And we were like, "Where are we?" And but at the end of it is the animal shelter, and they have a beach that you can walk the dogs to. It's a little bit less than a mile, like maybe 3/4 of a mile to get there. And there's no one there. You basically have your own private beach. They have a little setup with like umbrella. There's an umbrella and some water and things. And once you get to the beach, you can actually, depending on the dog, you can turn the dog loose. And the dogs will run around and play in the water. And, you know,
That's fun.
It's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
What kind of dog did you get? A big one? A little one?
We got the bigger dogs. My husband was with me and and so they took a look at us and they were like, you know, you guys look fairly athletic, so we're going to give you the Goofies.
Oh no.
And the goofies are kind of the younger males that are jumpy and active and playful. And so, we walked some Goofies
down
to the beach. Yeah.
Okay. And you can find where have you found places you could walk dogs that you didn't expect? I mean, are these all over? You said these are all over the place?
For the most part, basically, where are we going? I was in Chattanooga a while back, and you can Google the Chattanooga Animal Shelter and look and see if they do a dog walking program. And then from there, you can just email them and find out. Depending on the location, some like to know in advance if you're going to do it. And then others like Sawaland, you just show up and they're like, all right, here's a dog, off you go. And, and they'll give you water and treats and everything because it does get a bit hot.
Oh, there. Yeah.
So, yeah, but no, for the, you know, it probably doesn't hurt to do maybe a little bit of research on your own. But yeah, other than that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So when you travel, say you got a gig in, I don't know, pick a place. It's like a food and beverage place in, okay, we'll go to France.
Okay.
Do you like, okay, I have to go there on assignment,
mm-hmm.
but do you also tack on like an animal aspect to it and
double up on it? Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Actually, what's funny is when you were trying to think of a city, I was going to go throw out Jacksonville, Florida, because I actually did that.
Kind of like France.
But, I know. Right, Jacksonville.
Sure, yeah. What is there to do in Jacksonville? I don't get Jacksonville. What is there?
Beer, okay. Shrimp.
Yeah.
And coffee. They have something there called the Coffee and Donut Trail.
Wow. Which is
kind of how that's how the whole thing started.
Okay.
was I found out about this Coffee and Donut Trail. And they also have the last remaining Folgers coffee plant. Wait. Yeah, Folgers. I forget which brand now. But it's the last coffee roasting, like big coffee roasting plant in North America is in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, wow.
And distilleries, breweries. They have something called the Shrimp Trail where you get local seafood. And so, yeah, it was a food and beverage trip. That I organized with the local tourism bureau. And of course, I said to them, by the way,
do you have any animals?
I have this animal welfare blog. And
right.
I ended up at the Caddyshack Ranch outside of Jacksonville, which is a tiger rescue.
Okay.
Big cat rescue.
Mm-hmm. Caddy with a T. Two T's, not D's. Bill Murray wasn't hanging out there. Yeah, okay,
nope,
I get it.
Nope.
Yeah. So it was tigers.
Yep, tigers. A couple of mostly tigers and then obviously the Florida Panther. They have they've taken in some injured Florida Panthers there as well. But yeah, really big cats, but mostly tigers.
I was amazed to find out once. I was working somewhere up in Nowheresville, Northern Wisconsin or something. And somebody told me, oh yeah, down the road, there's a lion shelter or something. Like, what? And it was a private, almost a home or something. And they could have these things, not really a home, but I mean, it's it was literally, we're going to build a zoo on our farm or something.
Was this again?
I think this was in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And this could have been 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But I was amazed to learn that it really varies from state to state what's allowable, what kind of, certain states you can have a monkey, anybody can have a monkey.
Oh, absolutely.
And others are no way.
Yeah. I gave a presentation. So I was in Chattanooga for the Outdoor Writers Association conference. And so I gave a presentation on this very subject. And there are 7 states in the U.S. that still allow big cat private ownership. North Carolina is one of them.
Yeah, this Tiger King guy. You see that, crazy, right? I mean, I don't know. I mean, are you working towards, you want to shed a light on this, but is the goal to nationalize this and have some laws that, that are consistent or?
Yeah, so there is a law. So after the Tiger King came out, Congress passed the Big Cat Public Safety Act. And this was in 2022. That bill had been in committee for years and it always got put on the bottom of the pile, because who cares, right? And then the Tiger King came out and people were like, oh my God, we're actually doing this here in the United States. And so the bill did get passed. And it is an update to an even older bill that was, passed in 2004. That I think was just it was part of the Endangered Species Act. Well, this one was specific to big cats, but even this law still has some loopholes in it which I think the plan is to close them down over the course of years. Because like I said, seven states still allow big cat ownership. And then even within those seven states, there, you know, some states you have to have a permit and a license. And then in other states, you simply have to have enough money to buy the cats. So, yeah, so we're going the right direction, but it's going to be a slow process. Laws are slow.
Are some of these cats used to, like, you know, these big ranches where people can go hunt them privately? Do they do that? I mean,
that I know that was done like in the 90s and early 2000s. I don't know what the status of that is right now. There was a statistic that the World Wildlife Federation put out back in 2018 that basically said that there were more tigers in captivity in Texas than there are living in the wild. And I until I hear different, I assume that's still true today. And a lot of those are hunting preserves. So it's hard to say for sure. There is more awareness about it, but it is really hard to say for sure.
Oh boy. Mm-hmm. How about you personally? How many pets do you have?
Right now we have one.
Oh, okay. What is it?
In fact, I was trying to see if she's around here somewhere. She might come in here. So we currently have a husky rescue named Bijou.
Oh.
And we adopted her. It'll be 2 years coming up in November from our local shelter. And she is 80% husky because we did the test last year.
Okay.
18% German Shepherd and 2% Chow.
Sounds
and
big.
She's adorable.
She big?
50 pounds. Yeah, 50.
Big
53.
Enough?
Yeah, big enough.
Big enough to knock you over if you...
I'm surprised she hasn't come in here yet because I just said her name.
Oh, right.
And she's like...
Yeah, she'll be there.
She'll come eventually. But she is she's our fourth dog. And then I had a cat that passed away about a year ago this time. I volunteered for Foothills Animal Shelter in Golden, Colorado for 10 years, only brought one animal home, and that was Jack the
Such
cat.
Such discipline.
I know. I'm so proud.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, maybe in the next couple weeks or months, maybe another cat is around the corner, but.
Okay. What about your thoughts on meat and eating and not just here yourself or and around the world? People eat a lot of different stuff that seems weird to Americans, and we eat stuff that seems weird to the rest of the how do you handle it, and what are your thoughts on the whole thing?
Yeah, what's funny is I thought I would get this question at the writers' conference and I didn't.
Okay.
So I do eat meat. I am a meat eater. However, knowing what I know, I'm pretty selective about it. We don't really buy meat in a grocery store anymore. Actually, here in North Carolina, the Charlotte newspaper did an expose on the poultry industry in 2024, and it's not good. That's curtailed a lot of my poultry eating so far. If you are a vegetarian or vegan, I think that's wonderful. And, you know, I encourage that and it's great. But then again, you know, we humans, we've been meat eaters for tens of thousands of years. I said it earlier, you know, circle of life, that's kind of, you know, we have domestic livestock and things that we've had for millennia. And those animals, you know, there are benefits to them when they are treated well and when they are respected. I don't see it as a bad industry. I often think back to, you know, like the Native cultures here in the United States and how, you know, they revered animals and the blessings that they would bestow upon them before they did any dining. So I, you know, if someone eats meat, I have no problem with that. I don't eat much of it myself, but I do eat it. Yeah. So
I know I'm caught kind of the same way. I mean, I still eat it. But as a diver though, I mean, I remember sitting, I think it was in Greece, and I went on a dive there and saw hardly any fish.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting with someone that night saying, you know, we're at a restaurant, you know, just going, boy, it's kind of a bummer that, you know, there wasn't many fish out there. And literally I'm eating fish while I'm saying, boy, that's a shame.
And that fish was probably shipped in from somewhere else.
Yeah, literally fish in my mouth. And I'm saying, it's a bummer that there's no fish out there. And then just like, yeah. So I tried to make a point of like, okay, I don't want to eat anything endangered for sure. I mean, I've been in Norway and been offered like whale. And I just go, no, I don't. I mean, yeah, I'm kind of curious, but I don't want to, like shark fin soup, I won't do and things like that. And, you know, as in Africa, people would offer you a lot of different things. It's like, I don't know. I want to know what a lion or a tiger tastes like. And I'm pretty good not knowing, you know, there's not many of them out there. So it is, it's like we have these diets that still go way back to when there weren't 8 billion people on the planet. And just like, it just doesn't seem sustainable that we can eat like we used to when there's just too damn many of us.
Yeah.
I mean, we've outnumbered the animals very much.
It's a very complicated subject, you know, and I have tremendous respect for, you know, cultures who, again, usually indigenous cultures who, you know, you talked about whale and lion and giraffe, and that's all that culture has ever known. And that's, you know, that's what's abundant where they live. And then here in the States, we have, you know, meat is an industry, which is a completely different concept and a completely different way of eating, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think most people in those cultures, if they saw a factory farm, would be beside themselves. They'd be shocked at what they saw.
Yeah.
So on your blog, are there certain places you promote? Do you help people guide them in directions? Do people write you and go, hey, can you point out a good place for us? Can you help book a place? I know you're not a travel agent, but do you work on that? Do you advise people?
I don't advise people, but that is part of what the blog is for, is to give them some ideas. Again, going back to like the dog walking thing or maybe a horse trail ride, or, you know, these are things that people want to do, or visit a zoo or some other attraction. And I can say, well, I've been here and this is what I learned, and these are the people that run it. So if I like it, you'll probably like it too. I was going to say, I've never really advised anyone specifically. And what's also interesting is not a lot of people really recommend anything to me. Most of them are places that I've found out myself because I've put in the work, I guess.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, before we get off the food thing, give me the craziest thing you've ever eaten. Something you'd never thought you would eat anywhere in the world.
I don't know if this is crazy or not, but I was on a press trip in Cancun, Mexico, and we had pizza with ants on it.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say I've had like
I think a lot of people have had that, so I'm not sure. But it was kind of funny because they looked like little refried beans. They looked like little black beans on there. And the chef was like, oh, by the way, these are the ants. and they were crunchy. And
yeah. It's like eating couscous or something. I've had the crickets down there. Then you learn after a while, you know, you could pretty much deep fry anything. And if it's small enough, you wouldn't even know. You wouldn't know.
I'm willing to try, you know, most things, you know, once. I mean, I've had Rocky Mountain oysters, you know, I've had octopus. I've, you know.
Yeah. How about, that end, any food poisonings anywhere? Any sicknesses? Here
surprisingly, no.
Oh, good for you.
No, actually, what's funny is that trip to Nepal, before I left, everybody was like, oh my God, what are you going to eat there? You know, what do they eat? Oh, it's good. You're going to starve.
It's been on my bucket list forever. So I've been trying to get there. What did you eat?
Everything. It was amazing. It was that was a vegetarian trip. So there was no meat on that trip. But they have amazing food. I mean, I had a red velvet cake and a latte that were to die for. And we ate lots of the local specialties called Momo, which is basically a dumpling. And obviously, you could get meat in it if you wanted to, but we would just get the veggie dumplings. And then they have their own special sauces, you know, hot and hotter. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and it was fantastic. The food was just absolutely amazing. And it's just, yeah.
I had no idea what to expect.
You don't know what to expect, but you know, when you're open and traveling and things, that's what happens.
Were you in Kathmandu mostly?
Yeah, we were a week in Kathmandu. And then the second week was in Bhaktapur, which is about 45 minutes away.
Okay. Do you still see remnant? When was this?
2022. So we were coming out of COVID, actually.
Right. So did you see any still remnants of the earthquake that happened?
In Bhaktapur, yes. Yeah, lots of scaffolding. And we actually stayed in the city center, which is where all the temples are and like the old palace part of the city. And we stayed in a guest house that was locally owned, and it was in a little square. And across the square was a coffee shop. And we got to meet the owner of the coffee shop because that's where we would have breakfast every day. And it's a building that had been in his family for generations. And he grew up there. It used to be their home. And it was damaged in the earthquake. And this young man got the bright idea to turn it into a coffee shop, restaurant. They even serve alcohol. So there's even a little bit of a nightlife there. But he had to convince his family to go on this adventure kind of, and, you know, and then COVID happened. And so they were really, really worried. And I still follow them on Instagram, and they're just serving up coffee. And if you go up to the third floor, you are eye level with this beautiful temple across the plaza. And it's absolutely fantastic.
That sounds great. That's like I said, it's high on my bucket list. And where else is high on yours? Where you want to go next, and where you're dying goodness. To go
to? So let's see. I am working on a trip to Anegada, which is in the British Virgin Islands.
Oh, okay.
And they have flamingos there.
Okay.
And they also have no Wi-Fi, so it's
right. Oh, speaking of the Caribbean, the pigs that go up to you on the pig beach, you know, and you go up, they come up to your boat and they swimming pigs or whatever.
Yeah,
have you seen that? And I think that was on your blog.
Yeah, I've seen the videos and stuff. I've actually not gone to that specific island, and it is kind of a fun, interesting history, like how they got there.
Yeah,
and all kind of that stuff, and by most accounts, they're pretty friendly, but they might be getting overfed, by all the tourists. But I was gonna say I have a different pig story. So I have met the drinking pigs of St. Croix.
We stayed there a few years ago, and I saw there was a bar that was advertised this pig that would. You had to drive. It was way up in the mountains or something.
It's kind of in the forest. Yeah, it's nowhere near the beach. So you kind of have to, if you're going there, you're pretty intentional about it. But it's a wonderful bar off the highway, and which that was unique in and of itself because they serve a, I don't even know if it's worth calling I'll call it a spirit. They serve a spirit called Mamawana,
right,
which is basically moonshine and twigs. And leaves that they let sit for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Every country has their own local moonshine.
Yeah. And I tried it. It was pretty good. And then, and then they have the.
You saw the pig.
And then I saw the pigs. I have learned. So this trip was about 10 years ago. I have learned that one of the pigs, the patriarch, he passed away about 6 months ago, and I believe he was 32 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And yeah, he was the patriarch, and then there was like his partner, and then there's a son named JJ, and there's a granddaughter named Oreo, and they're all still part of this family. But yeah, for the price of a can of Old Duels, you can give them a beer.
Maybe, and it's keeping them young, apparently. It's like it's making them live a long life.
Yeah.
Wow.
What people don't know, though, I think if you've never done it, these pigs have huge teeth. They have fangs. Yeah. They're gigantic. And you get that lecture before you go over there about do not let your hand get in the pig's mouth. Because I have a photo of one of the pigs. And there's one photo of him with his mouth closed and one with it open. And the one with it open is terrifying. It is just absolutely terrifying.
Well, other than the pigs, there's a certain animal experience that you're really dying to do?
Basically, the one I mentioned when we were talking earlier, yeah, I would love to go to Africa. And I think it'd be fun to just do a dog and cat shelter just because who does that in Africa?
Right.
But I, first of all, I'm open to any and all animal experiences. Actually, something I've been really working hard to do, and this is not easy, is I want to see the Synchronius fireflies here in North Carolina. I think I said
Synchronius.
That right. Synchronius. So these are fireflies that fly and their lights shine at the exact same time. And they have them in Great Smoky Mountains National Park and a couple other places in and around North Carolina, basically in the Blue Ridge Mountains, basically. And you know how birds fly synchronously?
Yeah.
These fireflies do the same thing.
Oh, wow.
But it's very...
Okay.
The people who can see them, it's very limited, and it's done on a lottery system. So I've been trying for like 3 years now, and I have yet to get in.
So, oh, man. So it's like a little mini drone show. That sounds cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It just sounds absolutely fascinating. And it's the only place in North America you can see them. And yeah, it's right here in my backyard. I'm still working on trying to actually see them.
All right. Well, let's take a minute and give Charlotte some love and their region. So I've been to Charlotte as well. And much like Jacksonville, I went, okay, it's a city. You know, Charlotte, you're not known for a ton. There's NASCAR and a lot of banks, from what I remember. And
a lot of bad sports teams.
Yeah, and it was a lot of construction from it. It was growing fast. So,
yes.
But we hear more about, like you said, the mountains and Asheville and all that region. Mm-hmm. And then we hear about the Outer Banks.
Mm-hmm.
What can Charlotte give us? Give us one mm-hmm. thing we could see in Charlotte. Or two.
Sure. My favorite thing in Charlotte, and I'm lucky I live 50 minutes away, but it's the U.S. National Whitewater Center.
Whitewater Center. Oh, I had no
idea.
Yeah,
it's right. It's it's on the far western edge of Charlotte. And yeah, it is an outdoor whitewater rafting playground, controlled courses. They also offer zip lines. Paddleboarding, kayaking. I do a lot of yoga there.
Okay.
They have yoga classes on weekends. And then my favorite thing, actually, I have my t-shirt on.
Ah, it's an animal. It's a paw. I see it.
So a year ago, they opened up definitely the largest off-leash dog park in North Carolina. I don't know if it's the largest in the country. I need to look into that. But it is acres of off-leash area for dogs. There's ponds they can go swimming. There's a dock they can jump off of. There are hiking trails. In fact, they just opened up additional hiking trails. And they have a tap room in the property. So you can have a beer while you are walking your dog.
That's a genius idea. And I can't believe every dog park doesn't have a bar attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I can't believe that. Or at least a coffee shop or something. that's cool.
That's fantastic.
All right. And as a somebody who lived in Colorado for 20 years or so, how are you dealing with the little thing we call humidity? How do you liking that there?
Well, I grew up in Nebraska, so I'm very familiar.
Okay. Right.
I grew up off the Missouri River, so I'm very familiar with humidity. However, I will say the South kicks it up a notch. It is it is a higher level than. So, but we're getting through it.
I think I've been ruined. I've been in California too long in terms of like I don't do humidity well. I grew up in Chicago, so in the Midwest, I know humidity, but I've been ruined. But I've been out here too long. Now I go down to Florida, I'm like, oh, I can't move.
My contacts like the humidity.
Yeah, okay.
Because I wear contact. Yeah, I struggled for all those years in Colorado.
How's your hair? Dry
eyes. There's good and bad.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, get your plugs in. Where can people follow you? And are you on Instagram or any other socials? Or where can people see your writing and stuff?
Yeah, besides the blog, you can find me on Instagram at Where Is CD Now?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also on LinkedIn under my name, Carrie Dow. That's really all the social media I do right now.
This is What's Positive? Do you have a site for that?
Not social media. I do.
Okay.
All right. But you will find it under my socials.
Okay. Yeah. And it's also, whatspositive.org.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll have links to all these at, traveltalespodcast.com. Mm-hmm. And finally, what do you think all this travel and all the places you've been, what has it taught you about yourself, about people and about the world? What have you learned from all this?
Well, for me, there's that phrase, you know, you can do hard things. That's for me personally. That trip to Nepal was a good example. That was, you know, I literally flew around the world because I flew east on both flights.
Yeah.
And, you know, meeting strange people in a strange place and becoming friends is wonderful. And then, you know, obviously the food and drink trying, that's one of the great things about being a travel writer is I'll try all of it. Sure. Bring it. I'll try it for sure. And then learning about the world is just, you know, I like seeing how other people live. I think that's part of the reason I do gravitate towards, you know, pets, dogs and cats. Like, how do people treat their dogs and cats. I was in Nice, France back in April and just watching everybody walk their dog along the promenade was, you know, that was just so much. I loved it. I'm like, you know, we're really not all that different. You know, that's what I do when I'm at home. I'm walking my dog and getting a coffee and, you know, and that's what a lot of people do everywhere. So it's fun to see that and to have that reaffirmed every time I travel somewhere.
Animals in planes or restaurants? Give me your thoughts, quick.
All of it, yes.
Okay. You don't think people are abusing it on planes now? I mean...
Oh, they are, but who cares?
Okay. Well, some of the staff might care. And,
the staff care.
They do care. Okay. Yeah, it is different. You'll go to like France and people take their dogs into every restaurant or, you know, and they're sitting everywhere and... It's still kind of shocking.
I have no problem with that. I have a husky. She sheds everywhere, so you may not want to eat at my house, but that's that's life.
Oh, all right. Well, hey, I appreciate you reaching out to me. It was great to meet you.
Oh, I'm glad I found you. I really enjoy the podcast.
What'spositive.org. I love that name. What's positive? Let's keep it positive. For spontaneous travelers, Winging It is the perfect listen. James Hammond shares stories and tips from 75-plus countries. Find it at voyescape.com.